access number 28660, Captain Robert Bonner, Real 11. Now, you were about to tell me about the worst ambush suffered by your regiment.
Yeah, let's see if I get a date. In April or May 1952, the battalion moved into the new operational area base in Pera, based on Trap.
Now, what was this incident and what happened?
Operations in the area started slowly but very confidently. And slowly because this was a new area and everybody had to get used to working with their new colleagues in the police force and also get to know the layout of the countryside. And the Cameron Highlands was a particularly vulnerable area, or the road to the Cameron Highlands was a very vulnerable road, extending for about, I suppose, 50 miles from the main road up through the jungle, and it was at this time that a large number of changes were being made, because having been our first national servicemen had now completed their length of service. So they sadly were dispatched home and replacement national servicemen arrived. So whilst the replacement soldiers initially had a period of again, the old acclimatization and jungle training, which was carried out on the island of Penang, and then they came and joined us in Tapa. So there was a great deal of inexperience now, and also a number of senior NCOs and a lot of the National Service officers had gone as well. So it was, in many ways, a new battalion. There was one really unfortunate incident where on a Sunday afternoon the company based up in the Cameron Highlands received information from the police that terrorists had ambushed a police vehicle and burnt it, and this had taken place some few miles down a jungle road. So an ad hoc, the majority of the company was already out on patrol.
Which company was
this? This was a D company, and it was felt that a patrol ought to go out and investigate the shooting. So an ad hoc patrol was put together under a corporal, and off they went together with a scout car and drove down the road to the area of the ambush in vehicles. And they got to a point on the road where they met a group of rather excited Malay policemen who told them that the truck had been burnt further down a jungle track and that the bandits had disappeared down there. So the patrol commanded by the corporal really acted without a great deal of, in my opinion, without a great deal of intelligence, because off they went into the deep, dark jungle with a noisy armoured car in front, not something to be recommended, and followed on. They went down this track for some time, and the driver of the vehicle, Holland. Hollander by name, saw a Chinese who appeared to be a woodcutter on the side of the road, on the side of the jungle in a small clearing. He thought nothing of this at the time, but as they went past, he saw the woodman raise his axe and bang it down onto a log, and this was the sign for automatic fire to be opened on the patrol leading, coming behind. Lance Corporal Mrozek, M-R-O-Z-E-K, was the machine gunner on the armoured car, and and endeavoured to get his machine, his Bren machine gun working. Unfortunately, these Bren guns on these armoured vehicles were fastened to the top of the vehicle and operated by a series of cables by the operator inside the vehicle. Unfortunately, this cable jammed, and the Bren gun on the top of the armored car didn't work. Mrozek very bravely got out of the turret and sat on top of the armored car, released and got the Bren gun into operation and proceeded to fire into the jungle where the terrorists were hidden. He then ran out of ammunition and the armored car drove on, leaving the rest of the platoon fighting in the narrow confines of this jungle track, as a result of which several were killed and wounded. At the terrorists came down, examined the dead, and then disappeared, and the armored car drove on a slight distance and raised radio communication with the base up in the Cameron Highlands. They had great difficulty in turning around because it was such a narrow track, and they came to a stream with a little wooden bridge over it, and again they had to cross this. The bridge collapsed, and Cliff Holland, the driver, drove back to the scene of the ambush, where fortunately the terrorists had disappeared, but he was able to give help to those who were wounded who were still there. It was a tragic day.
And what was the date?
And that was, hang on a moment. This all took place on the 19th of June.
What impact did this have on the unit?
It had a great deal of impact because although we had lost, I think, two men killed in action in Kedah, at no stage had anything of this nature occurred. And it was a very sad and really an unnecessary situation. Let's see how many were killed.
No. They can look that up. Yep. Now, what were you doing with your mortar platoon at this point?
Well, at this stage, we were able to use the mortar platoon in a more strategic position, in a situation. So acting on information, we would go out in support of rather larger operations. In fact, operations where perhaps the Royal Air Force had been used to bomb a certain area. So if it was known that there were terrorists in a certain area of importance, then a master plan would be made for perhaps a whole company or even two or three companies to patrol and go into a large area. Air Force planes to drop bombs on the suspected camp, hopefully driving the terrorists into the arms of the encircling soldiers, and we would probably be using a situation like that to back up the RAF by using high explosive bombs on positive area, positive probable areas of retreat by the terrorists. I don't think we ever actually caused any casualties, but it certainly would have been quite a frightening experience to be on the receiving end of these 3-inch mortar high explosive bombs exploding either in the jungle behind you or in the trees above you. So this was a good use of the 3-inch mortars in a strategic situation.
Now, what other instance can you pick out from this period?
There was one other particularly an amusing incident, really, as far as I was concerned. Again, it was a Sunday afternoon, and there hadn't been any patrolling going on, and we were all taking it easy in our camp in Trap, and a call came through from the local police to say that a bus and a bus which had been traveling with civilians and a 3-ton truck belonging to one of the rubber estates had been stopped. The civilians taken off the bus and all their personal documents and money taken from them, and then both bus and a truck were set on fire. And if that was that, so the police officer on duty in the neighbouring area said, "I would just like to have a small escort from you, please, and we'll take the police patrol out to have a look at it." So, having nothing better to do, I got hold of my 3-inch mortar platoon and one of the scout armoured scout cars, and off we trundled to meet the police patrol, and then we all drove off together to the area of the ambush. Got out, and then there were various civilians who'd been on the bus still hanging around. The whole area appeared absolutely quiet. It was quite a wide road. There was jungle on either side, and to the right-hand side, quite a steep hill leading off into the main jungle area. And so with my police colleagues, we walked along and inspected the burnt-out buses and bus and truck, and decided there wasn't very much we could do, and turned around and started walking back to our own transport. I suppose there must have been about 15 Malay policemen, my armoured car, and half a dozen soldiers. And as we were going back, and I was talking quite nonchalantly to the police lieutenant who was with me, I happened to turn round, and there, to my consternation, I could see a group of terrorists in full khaki, with all their packs on their backs, tiptoeing, if you please, across the tarmac of the road from one side to the other, going into the jungle on the side of the hill. I must admit I was a little slow off the mark and just shouted out, "Bandits!" And with that, of course, the bandits threw themselves across the road into the jungle, and I rapidly got my soldiers and the policemen, and we'd rushed after them. It was a real sort of cowboy and Indian drama period, and we went up into the thick undergrowth under the beginning of the jungle, and we then had a sort of a crawling and running session for the next hour or so after this handful of terrorists. At the end, all that we were able to say we had succeeded in, we recovered about 10 haversacks full of propaganda literature and food, and a couple of blood-stained bandit caps, which at least gave us a thought that we might have actually wounded somebody in the melee that followed this little expedition. So It didn't last all that long, I suppose, an hour and a half, 2 hours, the whole thing was over. We felt we'd achieved a little bit of success, but not a great deal. Although it wasn't quite the disaster it could have been, the special branch were delighted to receive the packs which the terrorists had been carrying, and it had quite a lot of useful information about movements of other terrorist gangs in the area.
Any other incidents?
The only other incident which really, I mean, there were lots of incidents, but the one incident when another patrol on the road was ambushed was when my friend Dick Ballinger, lieutenant, was taking his patrol, his platoon, out on patrol, and they were driving through, just driving into a small village en route to where they were going to debus. And as the first vehicle went round a corner, they were fire was opened on them, and fortunately nobody was hit. Dick very promptly got the vehicles through the ambush area and immediately debussed, and very quickly brought them back. He took his men straight into the jungle and did a sort of rear flanking attack on the abandoned position, and succeeded in after a short fight killing one and wounding at least two. So that was just an incident where they weren't prepared, but they were prepared for the possibility of an ambush, and the reaction was absolutely first class.
How long were you at this post?
We stayed there, I suppose, for about 9 months. We stayed there for about 8 months, and then the time came for the battalion to return to Penang Island. Every British.
How had the situation changed during that? I mean, what sort of success did you have?
We had had a great deal of, the battalion as a whole had a great deal of success, and this was without doubt the most difficult period of the whole of the Malayan emergency, and it was at that time that the tide turned, when the army and the police really got the better of the communists in Malaya, and from then on it was a much easier situation. There were more surrenders. Surrenders were coming in every day from the inner jungle camps of the terrorists, and from the information which the terrorists were very freely willing to give to the police. More and more successful raids were made on the terrorist camps. And we certainly feel that in the 3 years that the regiment was in Malaya, we were there at a turning point in the situation, and played an important role. We then went off from Tapu. We went back to Penang.
When was that been?
That was in the beginning of 1953.
January.
Yes, and this was because every British battalion in Malaya had to go back and have a period of retraining and peace and quiet away from the jungle. And
what kind of retraining was it?
Well, really, it was a question of getting back to the basic army skills of drills and weapon training and carrying out out tests of efficiency, all the basic soldiering skills which would be required in any theatre of combat. And it gave everyone an opportunity of relaxing, although Penang itself. There were terrorists floating around in Penang, but everyone in all ranks were able to enjoy a bit of peace and quiet before the final stages of returning to England the following year.
So how long were you in Penang for then?
Only a question of a few months, and then it was back into to our original hunting grounds of Kedah in places like Crewe.
Oh, right, so you went back to Crewe. Now, what was the situation in Crewe? Was the whole
regiment going? At that stage, I returned to England.
Ah, right. So you went home from Penang.
I went home from Penang.
Why did you go home?
Well, at that stage.
Was that the end of your tour?
Because our service in Germany counted as half overseas service, those of us who had served in Rhine Army and Berlin had a certain amount of overseas service accrued, and that taken together with the length of time we had spent in Malaya meant that we were due to go home and another posting. So myself and a lot of the commanding officer, Colonel Woolsey, and a number of the senior NCOs who'd all been in Rhine Army, all returned home to the depot in Ashton-under-Lyne.
What month did you go back?
That would probably be in June 1953.
Anything about the journey back?
No.
Now, we don't want to prolong the interview, I know, at your wish to necessarily. So what we'd like you to do now is just summarise, picking on the points you find of interest the rest of your career, finishing up with being regimental secretary, as I think you are.
No.
You've got some position in. If you just take us through,
right.
Just give an outline of your career, stopping at points of interest as you wish.
Yeah, okay. at that stage, I had hoped that... I had set my heart on going on one of the fashionable language courses and learning Russian. But it was not to be, and the colonel of the regiment decided that I should be the next regimental adjutant at the depot in Ashton-under-Lyne. So for the next 12 months, I became adjutant of the regimental depot, responsible for the supervision of the training of regular and national service soldiers.
A responsible job. Could you just briefly sketch out what you have to do?
Well, the adjutant is, as in any other unit, is responsible for the discipline and the well-being of whatever the unit may be under the guidance of his commanding officer. So, with the support of the regimental sergeant major, who again was a good old friend from Malaya and Germany earlier, life in Ashton, although not the same as in the highlights of Rhine Army or in Malaya, was very interesting. After I completed
that was 53, 54, was it?
That's 54, 50, and that's 54, 55. The 1st Battalion had by then returned from Malaya and was now in Berlin, where it stayed for the next 12 months and then moved to Minden in Westphalia. And it was whilst in Minden that I handed over my responsibilities as adjutant of the depot and rejoined the 1st Battalion in Minden as second in command of B Company, which for a period I had the privilege of commanding in the absence of any other senior officers.
That was what,
56, 57.
How was that? I mean, we talked about you, and we're not going into any detail. I know you haven't got any time left, but I mean, what was it? I mean, any points of interest that have changed?
Minden was a lovely posting to have. Pleasantly situated, a lovely old town situated on the banks of the River Weser, and within relatively reasonable distance of our training grounds in Sennelager. So a lot of our work was in carrying out training exercises on the British ranges at Sennelager near Paderborn. But more importantly was our internal security role in and around Minden because of the threat of Russian invasion at any time. And it was it was seriously considered that if the Cold War broke down, that the Russians would be out through Berlin and into the British zone and into Minden in a matter of just a few hours. So a great deal of time was spent in internal security role, in practice turnouts, in evacuating the families from Minden out to the Hook of Holland, and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, at that time, our commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Jack Foraker, a delightful man, wonderful pianist, for some reason or other, fell out with our brigadier, a brigadier whose name escapes me, but who was in the Green Jackets, the Rifle Brigade. And the brigadier took personal delight in making life for the Manchester Regiment as difficult and as awkward as he possibly could, which really didn't do any of us any good at all. A very unfortunate situation. I'd never come across a senior officer of that rank making himself so unpopular in so unnecessary a manner.
So what happens next then? This is 56, 57.
So, and then at that stage I had got married, and with the so life took on a slightly different tempo. The British Army was once again closing its ranks, and since the previous amalgamations of the infantry in 1947, it was proposed that infantry regiments again be amalgamated. So in 1958 came the amalgamation of the Manchester Regiment with the King's Liverpool Regiment, which took place in June 1958.
And you were still out in Germany then, were you?
Yes. At that stage, for various personal reasons, I decided that I really might make a more successful role in life as a civilian.
Now, I want to go back. These amalgamations are always interesting, especially.
Yes.
How did you react to the amalgamation? Do you think it was a good idea, or the only possible idea, or what did you think?
I think my view on this amalgamation was shared by the majority of my colleagues. We all felt it was rather unnecessary. We certainly had never had any great dealings with the Liverpool Regiment, and the only good thing really was that way back in 1758, the regiment which eventually became the Manchester Regiment was the 2nd Battalion of the 8th Regiment of Foot, which became the King's Liverpool Regiment. So there was a family tree connection there, which the majority of us thought, well, if we're going to amalgamate with anybody, then this is an appropriate amalgamation.
Was the amalgamation a success?
The amalgamation turned out to be the most tremendous success in all respects. There was a certain amount of confusion over the name of the new or the title of the new regiment, and it was decided in the first instance that it should be called the King's Regiment in brackets Manchester and Liverpool. This in fact was used for a very short time, but it then became generally felt that it sounded much more like the title of a railway company, and the brackets Manchester and Liverpool was dropped really within a matter of months rather than years.
How many battalions did the King's Regiment have at the time?
There was exactly the same as us. There was one regular battalion of the King's Regiment and one battalion, a regular battalion of the Manchester's. In addition, we had two territorial battalions of the. That's wrong today. The question of the territorial army battalions didn't arise because it was only the regular army battalions which were being amalgamated. And the amalgamation of the territorial battalions only came several years later.